Log Talk Radio.
In the beginning was the beat, and the beat was the rhythm of God, and the rhythm of God is the harmony of humanity, and where there is harmony, there is peace.
Greetings, family, and welcome to the Us Lifting Us Thursday Night Dare to Win call. Tonight, we have a very interesting conversation to carry forth. The question is, what role do values play in human society? And what do we mean when we say something is African? And also, why is this important for African people in 2020. We will get started with this conversation in just a minute as soon as the music finishes. Once again, greetings, family, and welcome to the Us Lifting Us Dare to Win program. I am Brother Thurman, and I am one of the Us Lifting Us members, and also on the call is also a fellow Us Lifting Us member, Brother Kimbizi. And the Dare to Win call is a weekly program. It's every Thursday from 9 p.m. until 10 p.m., where we have a sobering discussion about the plight of African people and the need to build a global cooperative economy to gain self-determination. And we invite you to make sure that you're taking notes. And if you're listening online, you can call us at 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. And press 1 on your keypad when you're ready with a question. And if you are listening by internet radio, you can go to www.usliftingus.com. That's www.usliftingus.com. And look for the gold bar that says Ulu Radio, and you scroll down and click on the globe where it says Listen Live, and that will put you onto the internet radio. And thank you so much. And once again, the question is, Brother Kimbizi, we want to welcome you to the call tonight and tell us how you're feeling tonight.
Good evening, Brother Thurman, and good evening to the Ulu family and those who are listening to our program tonight. I'm excited, and we're living in such a tumultuous era. And the opportunities to elevate and to seize the high ground are right there at our fingertips. So I'm excited and looking forward to tonight's conversation.
Wonderful, wonderful. And so tonight, the conversation topic, the question is, what role do values play in human society? What do we mean when we say something is African? And why is this important for African people in 2020? And Brother Kambizi, let's get started. Go right ahead and let's delve into this vital subject.
Okay, Brother Thurman, thank you. Let's begin. You know, I was looking at an article that was written by Lerone Bennett in the late 80s entitled The Second Time Around. And he was arguing that black folks had two prior periods of social progress, the first being Reconstruction immediately following the Civil War, a brief span less than 10 years where the Freedmen's Bureau and quite a few things were done. Public schools were open, societies were formed, formerly enslaved people were able to reconnect with their families, but it came to a very abrupt ending as whites regained power, particularly after the Hayes-Tilden Compromise of 1877, and then, of course, the Plessy versus Ferguson decision, Supreme Court decision in 1896. And then he mentioned the fact that as a result of the civil rights movement in the late 50s and 60s, and we particularly with the passage of the Voting Rights Bill, Lerone was writing in 1980s, and he said, you know, after every period of progress, we find ourselves facing a backlash and this whiplash. And it struck me that now what we might be looking at is the third time around after the Obama presidency and that 8-year period. Now we find ourselves in the grip of a very virulent a period of oppression or about to be oppression. But the thing that's operating through all of those eras is we have not really had a conversation around the importance of values, Brother Thurman, I don't think. And all human behavior is guided by a set of values. Whether the values are, they also shape our attitudes. So we have values, which are these ideas that really govern behavior. But the values give rise to attitudes, and that is how we feel about certain things. Once our attitudes are formed about a particular matter, then we act. Either we are in support or opposed or indifferent. How strongly we feel about a particular subject determines how vigorously we will act in regards to that. This seems pretty straightforward. So at the outset of our conversation tonight, I want to make three statements. First, values are important because they are tied to survival of the group. I can't state this too strongly. The reason we call something a value is because the group has determined that this particular idea and behavior is critical to the survival and the continuation of our group. So values are not something, you know, on a whim, an afterthought. Values are at the core of how we understand ourselves and what is necessary for us to continue to survive. The second idea is that values require an economic base in order to manifest or to materialize or to be expressed. And this is the point where when we talk about, well, let me just go back. They require an economic base. What I mean is that human groups, when they find themselves on the planet thousands of years back, the first activity they had to take care of was they had to provide food, clothing, and shelter and protection for themselves. That work of providing the food, the clothing, the shelter, that was economic activity. And so it was in the doing of that activity that their values became clear. So that if we have, for example, a value for cooperation, then we will cooperate to gather the food or to make the clothing. If we have a value for the group and the community, then we will make sure that every member of the group or the community is taken care of. But it is in that economic activity that the values are expressed and become visible to the members of the group itself and anyone observing them from outside of the group. And the third point that I need to make is that a political system reinforces the values contained in the economic base. So in other words, the values reside in the economic activity of the community or the group, which is its base, and then the politics, the power dynamics arise from that. So then we begin later on to pass laws, but the laws really are passed to protect the economic behavior patterns that we have said are important to our survival. So with that as a background, let me go on to say what is not so clear in our conversation about values and value systems is that these values operate in the background of our decision making. Our value system is like the operating system in a computer. It performs its function out of sight. But rest assured, it is impossible to do anything on a computer that is not pre-programmed into it, into the operating software. That is the same way with values. Anything that really goes against the value ultimately will not continue in the group. It is interesting that we often hear the term in America, family values, thrown around. Also, many of us who work for large corporations or other organizations or have worked for these organizations are familiar with the phrase company values or core values that supposedly define who this company is and what their mission is. America as a nation proclaims itself as being the bastion of democracy and freedom. In other words, these are the founding values of the American society, democracy and freedom. But it can be very confusing trying to figure out how people who proclaim family values can separate children from their parents at the southern border and traumatize the children for life and still say they support family values. Or how can a country dedicated to democracy and freedom bomb and destroy other people who are also struggling for democracy and freedom? When we see these huge contradictions, we say these people are being hypocritical. I think we miss the elephant in the room if that's how we analyze that kind of behavior, those contradictions. Democracy and freedom and family values are not the true values of the people behaving this way. The best way to understand values is to observe the human behavior first, look at it very carefully and very critically, and then extrapolate back, in other words, go backwards to detect what the real underlying values are, because those underlying values will really explain the behavior. So when we examine the behavior of significant portions of the white population in America who stole the land of 20 million natives, the native indigenous people who were here, and then exterminated them, who enslaved millions of Africans, brutalized them, bred them, worked them like animals, murdered them on a whim, who vote for war on people of color, who allow police to shoot and kill unarmed civilians of color, who incarcerate 2.5 million people and put many of them on death row. And I'll just mention the movie Just Mercy, the story of the lawyer Brian Stevenson, and his success enabled to get Harold McMillan off of death row, who was never even guilty of what he had been charged for. So we simply must conclude that the operating values of America are as follows. So the first value that really defines and identifies what America is all about, the first value is domination by white people over black and brown people using lethal force. The second value important to this country is materialism. Ultimate reality is tangible. It's measurable. It's visible. It's how does the expression go? I'm from Missouri. You have to show me. There is the phrase on the currency that says, in God we trust. What that really means is we trust in the material dollar, which is the God of this country. In other words, in America, if you can't see it, touch it, smell it, hear it, or feel it, it's not real. Now, contrast that to the fact that there are huge swaths of the human family on this planet who have a very different orientation about what is real. They have what we would call a more spiritual orientation. They take the position that everything that is visible and physical proceeds from the invisible. For these people, spirit is ultimate reality, not material. That's an important point, and we'll come back to that. And I would just ask our audience, which camp do they feel they fall into? Are we materialists, or do we see ourselves as spiritual? The third critical value in American society is individualism. Get all you can all you get, and then sit on the can. Life is all about me, myself, and I. Many of us who grew up in America are very familiar with the theme of rugged individualism and the Marlboro Man. And as the French philosopher Descartes said in the late 1500s, I think, therefore I am. Now contrast those statements with the African idea of Ubuntu, which says, because we are, therefore I am. And because I am, therefore we are. It makes crystal clear that these African communities, these African groups, valued community, and they saw that people or the individual was part of community. It wasn't one or the other, it was both and, the group and the individual, the individual and the group, and both of them had to be in harmony if the society was going to remain healthy. The fourth value in America is competition. And competition leads to greed and to lying and cheating and stealing. If you win in the end, it's all good. And then the fifth value that I would lift up that is so endemic to American society is that of violence, militarism, destruction, and death. So these are the principal values that drive white behavior in America and Europe. And I think the impeachment trial of Donald Trump is a perfect example. He is trampling the Constitution, stealing the taxpayers' blind, lying out of both sides of his mouth, but 40% of the country stands behind him. Why? Because he is the embodiment of their value system. He is championing the ideas, the values of white nationalism and white supremacy and white domination, which are the core values that America was founded upon. We must understand that melanated people gaining power are an existential threat to whiteness. They will watch the planet go up in flames before they will relinquish or share power with melanated people. And lastly, we must be very clear that capitalism, the economic system of capitalism, or whether you call it free enterprise, is the economic vehicle they use to guarantee their hegemony of the world. So these values, the individualism, the materialism, the domination, the violence, the greed, all of that is wrapped up in its economic base. And that is the problem that the world is wrestling with right now. I'll pause there, Brother Thurman, for comments or questions.
Yes, brother, that very good commentary that you've brought forth. And family members, you should be taking notes. And if you want to join the conversation and anything that you did not understand, you got a question about, please call in at 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. And press the number 1 on your keypad when you're ready with any question or comment. And brother, it's a very, very, very vital conversation that we've been deficient in having, and we thank you so much for what you're bringing forward. And so many points that you have brought forth so far, and I know that there's much more. So once again, family members, you want to join the conversation, please give us a call. So what we're going to do right now, Brother Kim Beasley, is take a quick break, and then we will come back and continue the conversation. Welcome back, family. We want to go ahead and continue this vital conversation. But the topic questions that we are discussing is, what role do values play in human society? What do we mean when we say something is African? And why is this important for African people in 2020? And Brother Kimbizi, you outlined the operating values of the dominant group in America and Europe, for that matter. So what are African values? Tell us more.
Thank you, Brother Thurman. Just before I go there, let me just say, someone did ask me the question, why is it that values need an economic system in order to become a reality? And it's not so much that they need an economic system to become reality, it's the practice of their economic activity that reveals the values. In other words, if you, Brother Thurman, and I and our family members find ourselves in a very paradise-like environment, the temperature's in the 70 degrees every day, there's periodic plentiful rainfall, there's lush growth all around us. There's abundant fruit hanging from the trees. Everything that we need to sustain ourselves is right there, and we don't have to sweat to get it. We just gather the food, we eat, and we enjoy each other's company. So in that environment, we're going to tend to be more congenial to one another, more caring about each other. The pace of life is not frantic. We're not grasping and beating each other up to get at the apple or whatever it is. There's more harmony. There's more cooperation. So in that environment, we see the values of cooperation, of love, of group concern expressing themselves. Now, if you contrast that and all of a sudden now we're in a very cold and barren environment, the ground is hard, the temperatures are sub-freezing much of the time, and food growing on the trees is scarce, if any at all. Well, in that environment, then obviously whoever can get to the food first will probably have the greatest chance of surviving. Whoever's strong enough to kill an animal and somehow manage to consume that animal will survive, and those that can't won't. So in that environment, violence tends to be prevalent. You're really not caring for the larger group. It's pretty much every person for themselves. So those are the values that then show up in those groups. And that is the connection between the values and the economic base. But we have to understand that the economic base is where the values are, and then those values percolate up into all the other social arrangements of that group. In other words, the base, the economy is the base, and the politics is the superstructure. So with that said, and thank you for the question, Brother Thurman, what is it that makes something African? There's a lot. Can you hear me, Brother Thurman?
Yes, I can, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Part of what becomes confusing for us is, we were given a lot of misinformation about the African continent. Those of us that grew up in the United States, I'm of an age where all through elementary, middle school, and high school, I didn't hear anything positive about Africa. I grew up at a time where Tarzan movies and the only images of Africa were people half-dressed and black as shoe polish and running around with bones in their noses. And so I didn't have many positive images and understandings of what was African. And so then when, you know, later on in life, when I got to college and I'm meeting sisters and brothers who are in school with me from the continent of Africa, and some of them are behaving very much like Europeans, then I'm thinking, well, what's African about that, or what's to be emulated about that? So the problem is we need to be very clear on what were those cardinal African values prior to the coming of Europeans to the continent of Africa. So then let's talk about that. And for me, the clearest and best example of what is African is what we use the term Ma'at. We in Us Lifting Us operate from a combination of two African value systems. The first is Ma'at, which comes from ancient Africa. Before Africa was referred to as Egypt, it was called Kemet, land of the blacks. And this was thousands of years ago. Now, the values, the core values contained in Ma'at, and Ma'at, by the way, means order. The primary values contained in Ma'at are truth, justice, righteousness, order, balance, harmony, and reciprocity. So anything that African groups and people were doing had to be truthful, had to be just, had to be done righteously, had to be done in an order that paralleled and mimicked cosmic order. There had to be balance, there had to be harmony, and there had to be reciprocity. These were the guiding principles that influenced and informed how African communities lived, how they behaved, how they went about the business of providing food, clothing, and shelter for themselves, and everything else. And as a result of these values, they built one of the most dynamic civilizations of all times. It certainly has far exceeded anything of the modern era. So that's the first set of values, Ma'at. The second set of values that governs and guides our work in Us Lifting Us is the Nguza Saba, the seven principles developed by Dr. Milana Karenga in 1966, which we celebrate during the celebration of Kwanzaa in December and January. And it consists of seven principles or seven values. And they are unity. The Swahili term for that is umoja, self-determination, which is kujichagulia, collective work and responsibility, which is ujima, cooperative economics, which is ujamaa, purpose, which is nia, creativity, which is kuumba, and faith, which is imani. I need to say very quickly this in terms of the seven principles developed by Dr. Karenga. The fourth one, ujamaa, cooperative economics, we really need to dig deeper into that because the word itself, ujamaa, when translated, it means familyhood. So in Us Lifting Us, we are in the process of building an economy based on familyhood. So for the most part, these values are self-explanatory, which raises the question for us, if these values are African in origin, if they are better for us, if they create a world where African people and all people really can live whole and productive lives and thrive, if these values can save the planet, why don't we all just adopt them? Sing kumbaya and live happily ever after. But as we said at the opening of our program, all value systems require an economic system for them to materialize or manifest or to express themselves. So in other words, even though we have been celebrating, African and African Americans have been celebrating Kwanzaa since 1966, because the dominant economy in the United States is capitalism, those principles never get a chance to express. It's hard for us to maintain a strong and cohesive sense of unity. Self-determination is a constant daily battle. The tendency to become individualistic works very hard against the idea of collective work and responsibility. In other words, whenever we try to practice these African values, whether it's Ma'at or whether it's the Nguza Saba, we find ourselves always up against the competing pressure of the American values, which are so deeply entrenched in capitalism, which is the governing economic system in this country. And it is because of that problem that we recognize that the only way that we will have full self-determination and freedom is we have to move from capitalism to an economic system of cooperative economics. Instead of private ownership of the means of production, we now have group ownership of the means of production, or family ownership of the means of production, or collective ownership of the means of production. And what I mean by that, Brother Thurman, is that as we know, those of us who listen to this broadcast or who have been to our website, when you become a member of Us Lifting Us, you become a co-owner in everything that Us Lifting Us operates, so that the membership in Us Lifting Us becomes part owner in all of the businesses that Us Lifting Us operates. Now, that's the critical difference. And because it is a cooperative economic model, now the values of Ma'at and the Nguza Saba can be practiced and manifested and have a chance to materialize. Let me pause there and see if there are questions or comments, Brother Thurman.
Yes. Family members, you can reach us at 929-477-2789, and press the number 1 on your keypad when you're ready with your question or comment. Brother, this is a very, very serious subject, and I'm certain, definitely, that the family recognizes that, and it's not talked about enough, and it goes into so many things, and you really need to come back, and you know, I know you could spend another hour or two or three or four on that subject, because it delves into so many things that as African people that we have been socialized out of our African mind to a great degree that we've got to regroup on. And earlier when you were talking about, you mentioned children, I heard someone talking about African values, and they talked about a time where it was common in Africa that African children would be just as calm about things, and if they were asked to do something, they would just calmly go do it, whether it was to go get some water or whatever, versus what is a major problem in the U.S., but it's also growing in Africa, is that children are frowning up about doing things where it used to be common that they didn't question it, they just did it. And so family members, if you want to join the conversation, please once again call us at 929-477-2789 and press number 1 on your keypad. So Brother Kimbizi, we've got much to do to that subject. See, like you mentioned Mayotte, and Mayotte has the 42 principles, and to get our people to delve into them and to make that a part of their thinking and behavior, to pre-program it, as you said, you know, back into their brain computer, we would have a different worldview and a different behavior about many things, and we're faced with so many issues, and it's just like Neely Fuller's book, The Code System, talked about 9 areas of people activity, and but in those areas, you know, including religion, politics, sex, and war, and on, there's an African perspective to all of those things, but we've been so dominated and socialized with this European perspective. I'm going to just pause there, brother, so you can continue on.
No, great points, Brother Thurman. And I'm glad you mentioned the children. The public speaker, George Fraser, makes the point that the Kikuyu tribe in East Africa have a way of greeting each other. And what they say is, and how are the children?
Yes.
And the answer is,
yes,
all the children are fine. And
yes,
and that's a very powerful, powerful greeting when you get down to the essence of what's being said. In other words, first of all, in order for life to continue, it continues through the children. So to
yes,
know how, what's the status of things, you have to ask, and how are the children? But the beauty
yes,
of the answer is all the children are fine.
Oh.
We live in a society where it's like, well, my kid's okay. I don't know how yours are doing, you know, or my kids are fine, but I know your kids are living under the bridge because you're homeless. That would not work. That is not an African concept. So we have to get to the place where when we see and greet one another, the first thing out of our mouths is, and how are the children? And
yes,
we have to be able to affirm back to one another, all the children are fine. So, yeah,
yes,
we do have work to do. But again,
yes,
that gives us another window into understanding what is African and what is not African. And
mm-hmm,
what we have to when we understand how we embrace the best of what is African and let that be the guiding energy around our behavior, that then helps us to rebuild our communities. Let me also say, Brother Thurman, that when we organize our money, our dollars, our financial resources, and we begin to build cooperative businesses, cooperative enterprises, the first thing that that enables us to do is these businesses become the means of production. And that is so important in community, in human community. The question that is being played out on the world stage in 2020 is, who will control the means of production? Under capitalism and imperialism and global capitalism, private ownership controls the means of production. The 1% control more wealth than half of the entire population. In other words, 50 families have more wealth than 4 billion people on the planet. Because the means of production, the banks, the insurance companies, the corporations, the businesses, the land, the natural resources, these are in the hands, these are privately controlled instruments. As long as the means of production are privately held, we will all find ourselves in some form of bondage, whether it's wage slavery or physical slavery. So in order to break out of the grasp of this destructive system, we have to find a mechanism that allows us to control the means of production. What we're living through in terms of a historic period, Brother Thurman, is we're witnessing the human family moving from a capitalist mode of production to a more cooperative mode of production. And that is why the Europeans and Americans are, for example, with the Trump impeachment trial. Now, those Republicans know that he's lying. They know that what he did was against democracy. But they also know that by lying and cheating and stealing, that's the only way they're going to maintain their power. And so what they said is, well, we don't care. We'll lie, we'll cheat, we'll steal, we'll do whatever we have to do to remain in power, because we refuse to share the planet with melanated people. And that's the insanity that we find ourselves caught up in. And so the only way that, I won't say the only way, but a very effective way to break free from all of that is to begin to open cooperative businesses. These are businesses that are owned collectively, not privately. And the beauty of it is, Brother Thurman, we don't have to petition anybody. We don't have to march on anybody. We don't have to march on Washington or state capitals. We don't have to get out and picket. We don't have to boycott. We don't have to ask anybody's permission. This is something that we have the agency within ourselves to do tomorrow if we decide to do it. It's just that straightforward. We can operate cooperative businesses once we make the decision that that's in our best interest to do. We don't have to ask anybody. And with $1.3 trillion flowing through our hands, there's absolutely nothing to stop us.
So that's the
first benefit, that we move control of the world's economy from private hands to the public hands. We get the private greedy people out of the way, and we begin to cooperate amongst ourselves and begin to feed, clothe, and shelter ourselves, and cooperate and share the resources of the planet and find collective solutions to the problems that we face, whether it's raising our children, whether it's taking care of the elderly, whether it's healing people who have sickness in their bodies. All of this is doable when we cooperate. You started to say something, Brother Thurman. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah. Yes, brother, you said it just in the last minute or two, a couple of times, when we cooperate. And so as we go forward with this cooperative economics and cooperative businesses that got so many benefits, and the topic tonight was centered around values, this subject of cooperating, as we participate in the cooperative economics, this cooperating, would that this type economic business model that we'd be using, will it affect values, this cooperating? Can you speak on how cooperating can tie into values?
Well, that's the whole point, Brother Thurman. Cooperating is a value. And contrast that to competing. In other words, we can build a business through competition, or we can build a business through cooperation. In capitalism,
okay,
the value is on competition. In the society that we're trying to build, the value is cooperation. In other words, it is far more important and essential to our survival to cooperate rather than to compete. And we see that play out in all of our organizations. When we work together, we get a lot done. But if we get inside of our own organizations and start, you know, backbiting and trying to outdo each other and try to outshine one another, then things get quickly out of hand. And invariably, it's that individualism and competition that undoes the good work that we could do or that we have done. So you're absolutely right. Cooperation is a critical value in our community. It has always been, and now we have to be intentional about putting it front and center once again.
Okay. We've got a caller, if you want to take the caller now.
Sure. Let's do that.
All right. Caller with the last four numbers, 3440-3440. Please give us your name and tell us where you're calling from.
Greetings, brother. This is Brother Shabaka calling from Baltimore, Maryland. Really have a good program today. I'm sorry I couldn't get in a little early to ask the question when you was dealing with values, but I would like you to, if you have time, to address a couple questions. One, there's several, groups that are out there, black groups, African groups. They consider themselves descendant of slaves, and they said that all of the values that we may have brought over has been removed. Slavery removed all of those values, and that there's no more African left in us. I'd like you to, maybe tackle that question. And in terms of the cooperation, what would that look like, particularly for Africans here in America, when the very foundation, infrastructure, superstructure is capitalistic in nature? How would we practically incorporate values from an economic foundation that would have and sustain the values that you talked about earlier, Ma'at, the Nguza Saba, and those things? I'll get off the line and listen to your comments. But thanks again, very important subject.
Brother Shabaka, you raised two very powerful questions. Let me take the second one first. In other words, what would cooperation look like today? Very simply, I would offer that participating in Us Lifting Us cooperative economic development LLC would be an excellent example of us making the decision to cooperate rather than to compete. In other words, $50 annual membership fee, and for those who are able, purchase a co-op unit for $1,000. And it's this pooled resources, pooled money that enables us to open the businesses that will provide employment for us. So that would be a very clear example of cooperation. And keep in mind that it is the values of the dominant culture, by and large, that prohibit us from cooperating and working together. In other words, we hear all, you know, we hear the naysayers, oh, black people can't do nothing. Girl, don't put your money in that. You know. So it is the value of cooperating is to say, yes, we've done great things in the past. We'll do great things in the future. And I'm going to cooperate with my own people to make this happen. Now, the other question about whether or not we brought anything over with us from Africa, that it's interesting that that conversation raises its head periodically in this country. Our best scholars have shot that down long time ago. I remember being in seminary, and the conversation was brought up. And so they said, well, what would surviving Africanisms look like? Well, one of the things that they pointed out was that many African societies were matrilineal. In other words, they traced the lineage through the mother line, and that in these communities, they would organize the housing in this matrilineal line. So the mother's house, the grandmother's house would be here. Right next to that would be the mother's house. Right next to that would be the daughter's house, and so on and so forth. And I at the time, I was dating a woman who was from South Georgia, a small town called Tarleton. I had gone to visit her, and right on the street where she lived, her grandmother's house was there. Right next to that was the mother's house. Right next to that was the first daughter's house. Right next to that was the second daughter's house. The children ran back and forth in between each other's houses. The matrilineal arrangement was so obvious, Ray Charles would have spotted it right off the bat. Now, that's just, someone said, well, that's anecdotal or it's just one example. But no, there are many instances of these kinds of compound arrangements that Africans have, that African in America have now built without even being aware of the fact that it was matrilineal or that it was a surviving Africanism. Jeremiah Wright talks about how, when we were having that conversation around Ebonics, he was saying that what the Africans were forced to do in coming to America was they were forced to take on an English vocabulary, but they then bent it around an African grammar. And you notice how when African people communicate, most of their words have a soft vowel ending, as opposed to a lot of the more European words. The Germanic words, for example, have that ing, the ing, or the ink, the ink. So you get that harsh guttural sound on the end of their words. You don't necessarily hear that in black speech, and so the surviving Africanisms are unlimited. Even though, you know, and we're not really that far removed, Brother Shabaka, from, most of us like four or five generations from somebody that was enslaved. And so the more pernicious aspect of those arguments that's being raised by those people, it just reflects what their real orientation is. The goal of that is to create disruption in the reparations struggle, to start to jump out and define who can get reparations and to try to create division amongst we who are descendants of these enslaved Africans before we can put our heads together and figure out, you know, how do we make the most cogent argument for reparations and what's the best way to follow that process out. And you have to wonder who's funding these groups that jump out here on the internet and they've got all of this, these arguments going for them. But that's why, Brother Shabaka, we think that this conversation around African values is important. In other words, if Ma'at is your guiding compass, so to speak, truth, justice, righteousness, order, balance, harmony, reciprocity, If the Nguza Saba is part of your consciousness, so that unity and self-determination and collective work and responsibility and cooperative economics and purpose and creativity and faith are what kind of anchors you and grounds you in the world, then you're going to interact with your people in a very different way. And you're going to be more open to finding joint solutions to problems that we all face. And it's not going to be so much name-calling and looking for ways to divide, but finding ways to stay together and work together and build together. That's really what is going on, I think. And it's interesting that we live in such a critical historical moment. Now is the time where all of us get a chance to make a decision and take a stand and reveal where we are. Now, we're not naive. We realize that we've been in capitalism for the last 500 years, and you know, we've drunk the Kool-Aid for quite a while. So we've got a lot of healing to do, and we've got to get a lot of this out of our own system. But if you ask me, you know, is competition or cooperation better for our people, I'm going to say cooperation. If you ask me, is material more than spirit more important than spirit? I'm going with spirit. If you ask me, is it better to be an individual or be concerned about the group welfare? I'm on the side of Ubuntu. Because we are, therefore I am, and because I am, therefore we are. So those are the choices that I think are before each of us, and as we make them, we declare what is really important. In other words, these are behaviors that are necessary for our survival, and that's what makes them valuable. We understand why Europeans behave in the way they do. We understand that they recognize that if they get into a loving environment with us and nature takes its course and white women start having relations with black men and vice versa, before long, there will no longer be any white folks, not pure white folks, and that's their greatest fear. I remember, I'm going to say this, and then I'll stop and let you react. Frances Welsing said she was giving a lecture in front of a group of predominantly white audience, mostly women. They were all women, as a matter of fact, and she said she asked them the question, how many of you in here would be comfortable if you had grandchildren that were colored, that were mixed? And she said not one hand went up. So in other words, that's their fear. And so they have to maintain power in their own minds because they want to regulate how humans interact and behave. Well, that's their problem. Our problem is we come from the richest planet. The resources are there. We have to reorganize ourselves and build institutions that allow us to thrive and prosper. I hope I answered your question, Brother Shabaka.
Yes, he's not on the line, but
okay. Well, that pretty much brings us to the end, doesn't it? I would simply say, Brother Thurman, if they'll go to the website and give us a very thorough look, and if it makes sense what they see, by all means, click the join button and let's get the movement kicked into high gear.
You're so right. All right, you got anything else you want to add in the last 2 minutes?
No, brother, I'll let you take it out.
All right, family, we thank you so much for being on the call, and please, you must take notes. This is a very, very serious topic because we've got to regroup back to African values, and there's a vast difference in actually – the attack on African values is affecting so many things. We mentioned children. It's affecting our relationship with elders. We used to have a very loyal and loving relationship with our people, the children and elders. And as we abandon that for the other model, there's an increasing disrespect among the people that operate that way when it comes to our elders. And so as we get ready to close out, family, I just read something from a brother that says, Brother Peter Brown wrote, they, talking about the Europeans, depend on their system for food, clothing, shelter, water, health care, and security. And then we depend on on them for these essentials. We depend on them for these essentials. That's not acceptable. And the ULU model of cooperative economics, us pooling our intellectual and financial resources, would position us to where we don't have to depend on them for these essentials. And we will be back with you next week. Thank you so much for being on the call, family members.
Thank you, Brother Thurman.
Thank you, Brother. Always.